Hey, isn't it a great journey we're on? And just so many things have been going on, so many miracles to get to the point where we are, you know, even to have a visualization of a new home, you know, so central to Greater Hobart for the future. It's just so exciting. And, you know, this started out 18 months ago with, you know, a contract on this building, not knowing where we're going and all the faith that was required to that, and it's just getting more and more tangible, and it's really tangible right now, because after today we have 3 Sundays, 3 weeks left in this building before we have to hand it over. And on Tuesday night we had our launch night, which was absolutely fantastic. And it was funny, actually. We had it was show weekend last weekend. So we've got a good number of people here this morning. You guys are amazing. Last week was probably our smallest service for the year, I reckon. And I said, here's a challenge. Let's see if we can have more people at our launch night than we do at our Sunday morning service. And we did, which was absolutely fantastic. And everybody who was at our launch night was just the spirit that you guys are, you know, getting on board with this move to a new home. It's just absolutely fantastic. So everybody filled one of these forms in about where they could help. And obviously there's all sorts of areas that everybody can get involved. But with 3 weeks to go, you know, the logistical stuff is where it's at for this first little bit. So the Saturday before we leave, the 23rd, we have a working bee here. And there's a place for everybody in that. We can all get involved and it'll be a lot of fun. There'll be a great atmosphere. We'll do a lot of work, but basically we've got to strip, you know, everything that's not sort of a fixture to this building is actually coming out, and it's going. We're going to have there'll be a container parked out there, and we'll load that container up with everything that we can fit into it, and everything that's of no value will go somewhere else. Probably around to Josh Swift's house. yeah. All the tip. And you know, we're gonna get it all cleared out, and then our last service here is just gonna be a big celebration. We're gonna honor God for what He's done and just the blessing that this building's been. We'll thank those that have come before us and the wise decisions that they've made to put us in the position that we're in. But it's really just going to be a time, you know, a family time where we just come together and honour God for what he's done and what He's doing, of course. So that's going to be absolutely fantastic. On stuff with the new building, we have our temporary occupancy. That's basically all through and sorted out. There's some work we obviously need to do, but that's really good. So that means at this point it looks like that we'll be able to be in. I think the first Sunday in the new building will be the 18th, is it? 15th? I'm always sort of within a few days. The 15th of December. And so that means we've only got 2 Sundays in the Newtown Bay Rowing Complex, which is, it's going to be great anyway. And just let's embrace that as a time to get together. It's a bit like going away in the caravan, being on holidays together, except it's a big caravan. You know, we got a little caravan, and not like Dennis and Karen's 55-foot caravan, but we go away with kids and an annex, and it's tight. But it's not going to be like that over there. But it's going to be a bit like being on holidays. So let's have a lot of fun. Let's enjoy the season and get ready for what's ahead. Fantastic days ahead. Have I covered everything, guys? Great. Well done. We've had a wonderful series going on at the moment. We've been talking about loving one another, and really. When Alex and I often have discussions about the name of a series, I come up with a name, and I'm not necessarily the creative member of our partnership, nor am I that dogmatic. Anyway, so we often have discussions about the name of a series or something like that, and she always wants it shortened because it looks better. It looks cooler, you know, it fits and it matches the font and all sorts of things like that. And we talk, so I'll come up with a name. She says, could it be, and often most times she's actually got good ideas and it's actually more memorable and it works better. But on this one, I actually stood my ground rather strongly and I was very, very, I was very, very dogmatic about it because I actually said, Ali, there's some theology I actually want to get through here. Sometimes, you know, these things don't matter that much, but I believe this one does. And you know, Alex thought it would look really cool to have something like Love Thy Neighbor, you know, in an old, you know, cool font or something like that. And I said, no. And she used the font. And I said, look, I want to, no. because if you understand what Jesus was talking about, there is actually a difference between loving one another and loving your neighbor. And when he is there in the upper room, before he's about to go to the cross, where he's not wasting words, where he's only talking about things that are incredibly important that he wants to get through, in that moment, he says to his disciples, you know, I'm going to give you a new commandment. You guys are Jews. You grew up understanding the Torah. You understand the teachings. You've actually heard the importance of loving God and loving people. You get that. He said, I'm going to give you a new commandment, is that you love one another. And they probably thought, oh yeah, we've heard this before. And then he said, here's the clincher. He said, love one another as I have loved you. And how did he love us? Well, he actually gave everything that was of value and importance and significance to him away. And it says in Philippians that he didn't consider the fact that he was God and equal with God something to be grasped or something to make a fuss about. He didn't actually walk around going, you know, do you know who I am? He actually got on with what he was called to do. And he said, I want you to love one another as I have loved you. In other words, that takes supernatural capacity from God himself to be able to do that. Because he also said that we are to love our neighbor as ourself. In other words, we show as much respect to every human being that we come across as we do to ourselves. But there is a new dynamic for those that are in the kingdom, those that are the church, in that we are to love one another in the same way that Jesus loved us. And that is the foundation that makes it possible for us to love our neighbor. And I believe if we can get that right, if we can get a greater understanding of that, we'll never get it completely right. We're flawed people. But if that is our spirit, that is our culture, if that is what we carry, people will absolutely flock to the church because there will be something different about it. There'll be a different spirit. See, in this world, there seems to be a lot of opinion and outrage about it. Have you noticed that? Just missed that one, did you? But Jesus clearly demonstrated and taught a different spirit. He so graphically and dramatically demonstrated this different spirit when he washed his disciples' feet. And it was in the unpacking of that he actually asked them to love each other in the same way that he loved us. And he wasn't talking about enacting a ceremony, but rather serving each other with a different spirit. And that different spirit is a spirit that has, first of all, the humility to serve. And some of us do that okay, but sometimes we even struggle with the humility to be served. And if you're a, you know, if you're one of these, a mercy gifted person and you're sort of doing stuff, you know, you're often very quickly around to somebody's house with a meal when they're struggling. But, you know, they ring you up and say, oh, what can I do? Oh, you know, I'm right, mate. Yep, no worries. And you know, I don't want to be a problem. But sometimes we've actually, to really see that different spirit enacted among us, it actually takes a sense of humility to be served. To say, actually, you know what, I need your love. And often we're thinking it and we're feeling it, but our words are like, yeah, I'm right. Everyone been there? I think we all have, haven't we? You just wish somebody would call up and say, hey, are you all right? Are you okay? But perhaps our body language is, well, I'm perhaps not okay, but I don't know if I want to let you in. So first of all, we've got to have the humility to serve, and then we've got to have the humility to be served. That someone will come and serve us and they won't get it quite right, and they might ask a dumb question and they might be a bit insensitive, but understanding that they are brothers and sisters in Christ, and what they're trying to do is actually serve you with the love of Jesus. That different spirit washes feet. Anything that we do for each other that washes away the dirt and the grime and the dust of defeat and discouragement, I think, is foot washing. It's easy to criticize those with dirty feet, isn't it? Rather than washing them. And I think in the church, it's easy to criticize someone that's got a certain attitude or somebody that's struggling in a certain way and feel, hey, that's not very Christian, or that's not, or that's not this, or it's not that. And sometimes we can, you know, talk to one another about it and even sort of want to help them through telling them how they could fix it. But how did Jesus do it? Jesus actually didn't say, you know, you disciples, this is how you fix it. He actually demonstrated a different spirit by going against his culture, against his position, against popular opinion, and picking up a bowl and a towel and dealing with the issue, which was the dirt and the grime on their feet that was making the aroma of the mealtime, which was meant to be special, stink. And how many times has, an, you know, something that is supposed to be special had a bit of an aroma about it, because perhaps we don't have the humility to pick up the towel and the bowl and wash off the grime rather than thinking about that thing and wondering what we can do. Let's not judge and condemn, but let's seek to love, understand, and restore. This morning, we said we were going to get practical as we go through this series. And I've asked a couple of people, or Alex and I have, to share this morning. And Dale and Tennille are going to just share a little bit of their journey in you know, what it's like to actually receive the love of the body of Christ through different seasons. And they've had very different journeys. But Dale, if you can come and join us first. Many of you know Dale has been in our church for a long time, but it's only fairly recently has actually come to a full faith in Jesus Christ. And maybe he'll share a little bit about that and how the body was part of that. So just encourage Dale. This is probably his first time sharing in this way. And we love you, mate. And whatever you say, we'll be happy with. And if it's wrong, we'll just wash the grime off.
Thanks, Dave. Right, I'll read Dave's notes. Hi, everyone. This is actually my first time up here speaking. There could be a reason for that too, by the way, Dave. My story, my journey, it's really one about love, really. It started in 2011. My sister passed away in a car accident, and that affected us quite badly. Myself, family, Grant and Gaynor, they were actually part of our family as well. And so basically Grant went on his own little journey, and he ended up here, brought Gaynor, and Jamie and Jack, and invited our daughter along to come to kids' church as well. So Tash, being the good parent, decided to come along and see what our daughter is going to. Instantly, she was embraced by, as Grant and Gaynor were, they were totally embraced by everyone here. The whole church just got around and just loved them. So I started coming not long after that, just to support Tash, to be there with Tash and get Grant and Gonor as well, and with my kids as well. That was difficult for me because I didn't believe. I didn't understand. my idea of church was all one about religion. A lot of it was people I'd known were very hypocritical. The way they lived their life, the way they actually spoke about their life with totally different things. So anyway, I kept on coming, support Tash and everything like that. Then after a while, Tash didn't need my support as much, but I kept on coming because I made friends. Those friends, after a little while, became family. And I was embraced. Although a lot of them knew that I didn't believe, they knew that whatever, you know, they just didn't care. They just kept on loving me. I'd go and have coffee with Dave, hang out together, Grant and I'd talk about different things. And Grant quite often couldn't understand why I didn't believe, because it was so apparent to him and everyone else. And Tash was the same. So anyway, so I then kept on coming, and I loved coming. The love that was shown in this place to me, although I didn't believe, it was just overwhelming. It was fantastic. So as the years went on, I got involved in a lot of different things. Men's ministry was quite good. And over that period, the change that I seen in my family members that were coming, it was all positive. There wasn't a bad thing about it. Now, I'm not saying it was all smooth sailing or anything like that. There were some really high, really lows. But they were just what Jesus was doing in their life was just amazing. And so I kept on coming, kept on enjoying it, not understanding it. Dave was doing fantastic stories about riding his push bike. I thought they were great, but you know, but wasn't understanding the message that was behind it. but again, it was all positive. And so I didn't care what I personally thought. What they were thinking was helping. So I kept on, you know, loving it. Then I started understanding the difference between faith and religion. That was a big moment for me, because I could never separate the two of them. They were basically always one in the same. But I found out that faith is all about love. It's the love that Jesus gave for us, the love that we give each other. It's all about that. To me, was quite a big thing. And so the biggest change that really happened was Grant's one of my best mates. He was going through a hard time, and he asked me to pray for him. I don't pray. Didn't pray. Why pray? I don't believe. Yeah. But Grant asked me to, and I said I would. And what I prayed for happened. So I thought, right, total coincidence. In actual fact, Grant knew. He knew full well what he asked me to pray for was going to happen. It was a setup. He done me. I thought, all right. My wife, Tash, was then going through a bit of a trouble at work. Not sure where her path laid at work. I thought, all right, I'll pray for her. And lo and behold, a week later, she then gets a promotion and is the now the manager. And it was amazing. It was like, all right, two for two. All right, one for myself. At the time, I was going through quite a bad stage, mental health-wise. I was actually going through a lot of different things at that stage, where at work, I'm a prison officer, and it was quite overwhelming and everything. But I'd started up my own just own little company, testing and tagging on the side. And I've been doing it for 12 months, and I wasn't really getting anywhere. And I was actually starting to think, well, this is a complete waste. I'm not I'm struggling to get any business from this, and I'm struggling to do really, you know, I'm struggling to enjoy it as well. So I thought, all right, I'll pray for that. I asked Jesus to give me some guidance. Show me a sign that what I'm doing is the right thing, I'm going in the right direction, and give me some support and love and all that sort of fun stuff. Lo and behold, a week later, I got a phone call from a company saying, hey, we want you to come do our test and tagging for us. That in itself was near three times what I already had for business-wise. And I thought, all right, that's three for three. All right. So it was amazing. After that, I started coming to church with a different perspective. Instead of just listening to Dave tell great stories, I actually started listening to the Word. And instead of listening to it, I was taking ears. I wasn't just hearing it. I was believing it. And it started really changing my life. And my connection to people were changing inside the church. Although I've had great friends and I felt like I was always surrounded by family here, it was still... It increased that. It just made me more accepted. So that's when things got even harder because I had a massive battle. My actual beliefs, what I believed, and this new thing that's coming in. And it was, and my mental health wasn't fantastic. And so I was actually at the point of near breakdown. And this song comes on. Reckless Love. Leave the 99. And I started really thinking about that, so I looked into it. And everyone probably more than likely knows this one, Luke 15:4. Suppose one of you have 100 sheep and lost one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulder and goes home. He calls his friends and neighbours together and says, rejoice with me. I have found the lost sheep. I tell you that that in the same way that there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than 99 righteous people that do not need to repent. And I kept on reading that one. And that was amazing. I thought, 99 people that, you know, and he comes after one. Is that one me? And that one, and then every time I heard that song, it just destroyed me. I was in tears. And it wasn't to, I reckon it was a few weeks that kept on going. And it was, you know how we quite often, we get a song, we play that each week. It was that period that over those weeks that it was just played time and time and again. What's that? Flogged. Flogged, yes. But it was a good flogging. So 23rd of September last year, I put my hand up. I said, this is too good. And the love that I was surrounded by at that stage, I can't describe. There was a lot of people here that were actually going, oh, what's a big deal? Doesn't he already believe? I've been coming here for 8 years, or seven, 8 years or whatever it was. And most of the people actually just thought I believed. There was no really, you know, surprise. And it was only a few months after that, as I said, kept on going on about my mental health wasn't great, and I had a few things that happened at work, and I really hit rock bottom. And I've come into church and I wasn't travelling very well at all. I was talking to Grant and I was just in tears. So he gathered up all the blokes and goes, come out the back. And they prayed for me for about 15, 20 minutes. I've never felt a feeling like that before in my life. I've never been surrounded by so many people that really just showed how much they love me. Right. And Claire was there as well, just so it wasn't just blokes. But, and that helped beyond words. It really sort of helped everything. And reassured the journey that I was on was the right one. I was going the right path, and I was surrounded by the people who really, really loved me. So, yeah. And so basically that really brings me up to where we are today. And we're now moving into a new building. But that really means nothing to me. All the building means is more opportunity. More opportunity to bring more people in, bring more people to love, and create a bigger family. That's the only thing that building is, because everyone that's sitting out here today is our family, and we love each other as much as it can possibly be done. So God bless everyone, and I believe that's it.
Ah, well done, Dale. So good. There's great power in a testimony, isn't there, in a story. Last week, for those that missed it, and it's worth finding out about, you know, God really did something. We just had some people having a talk. Alex and I chatted with Leonie and also Anthony, and we just talked about, you know, receiving the love of the church over a long period and the ups and downs of some pretty big things. And we also had a no-holds-barred sort of look at, you know, some of the areas where we don't get it right, where we miss the moments, where... And we're not wanting to focus on that, but we're certainly willing to be open enough to admit that we don't always do that, and to think about how we do go forward, and to really start to love the way that Jesus loved us. So, just talk to people, find out a little bit about that. It was a very special morning. Right now, there was somewhere during the mid-90s, a little young fireball came to be part, red fireball, joined our youth group, and girlfriend Moraine, and you know, Alex had quite a journey with this one at different times and things like that, and you know, we really grew to love her, and she's had an amazing journey, which she'll tell you some of it in a minute. Why don't you put your hands together for Tennille, who's going to come and share right now. We're very proud of you, Tennille, and really thankful for what God's done in you. So over to you now.
Hello. Well, likewise, let me just get organised. Okay. Yeah, no, it's really been such a privilege to be here, to still be here. As Dave said, I rocked into this joint about nearly 20 years ago. I was a 15-year-old... mouthy little Bergen. I really was. You probably don't really recall that, but I really was. So, and I got here because I had had a fight with some friends at school. I made friends with what we called some Bennies. And they went to this dodgy church youth group, and I went because I liked boys. So that's where I met my husband, just so everyone knows. I met my husband in this church, in this youth group, and... also, don't tell my kids that. So we've been married coming up to 10 years, and we have a lot of children together and have had a really lovely life. And so how I got here was really quite a miracle. I've had faith all my life. I've had this internal knowing, longing. I grew up in an atheist family, but if you ask them, I'm the weird one. If you ask me, I believe that God is real. I believe that he's the real deal. He has been apparent to me since I was a small person, even if I couldn't articulate what that was. So getting the opportunity to come to a youth group, even though I was trying to look more cool, for me, it was lining up with what was actually already apparent in my heart. So I walked through these doors, and I was like, big, big Wizard of Oz curtains. I was like, yep, here we go. And... some of the first things that happened was God put an amazing team of women around me. And it's upon looking back that I can see that people like Alex, people like Rosie Towns, Lorraine, who's not here today, there's another significant person in my life called Angelique. She was a youth leader in the youth group. She took a lot of her time to mentor me inside youth group and outside of youth group. So don't take for granted or feel that your time is lost on the youth, because it certainly isn't. It has made such a difference to my life. I probably wouldn't be here, or I may be the trajectory of my life may be very different if God didn't intervene and if I didn't have people who were willing to love me when I was the most unlovable. So that what did that look like for me, the most unlovable? Well, I grew up in family violence. I have an alcoholic as a stepdad. That was my regular. It was a very unsafe, very unstable, very not nice place to grow up in. And so in terms of church being a responder, some of the church were first line for me in my life. And as someone who works in a service that provides crisis care now, I actually really, truly understand what that meant. It's not an easy task to love someone with the level of trauma that I walked into this place with. It's not easy when you've got your own triggers. It's not easy when I'm a cactus sometimes. And I own that. You know, like I'm not always easy to love, because I've had to go on a journey over the last 20 years of not only learning how to love, but learning how to be loved. Learning how to be loved is a lot harder than learning how to give love. When you've grown up as being the person who's the peacemaker and the person who holds all the things together, even in a faith sense, to have someone come in and hold you up, it's hard. So a couple of years ago, I thought I was all good. I'm like, God's good. Everything's good. I know who I am. I'm feeling pretty grounded. I'm feeling pretty proud of some of my achievements. I'm looking at my kids. They're toads, but they're lovable toads. And I'm thinking, I've done okay for me. I've come out of where I've come from. I'm doing okay for me. And then one of those spanners occurred. I met my real dad. Not ready. It was one of those things that just rips you right open. Nothing I could do about it. I wasn't ready, but I kind of was. It was just one of those things that probably inevitably had to happen. But I was not prepared for what came after. I was not prepared. I had all these scenarios in my mind of what it may or may not look like, and it may or may not have looked like a lot of that. But what occurred for me in that time was, ouch, this hurts. I actually travelled to another country to feel the biggest rejection again that I'd ever experienced in my life. And it's taken me a very long time to talk about it. It's taken me a very, very, very long time to have words to articulate what that actually felt like. It made me question who I am. It made me question why I'm here. It made me question who I am as a mother, a wife, a daughter, a friend. It made me not trust. It brought out every single thing in my heart that, so cactus. So like, leave me alone, I'm lonely. Like, you know, love me, but on my terms. I didn't let anyone in. Sorry for that. Also, in that time, though, I really learnt how to be a worshipper again. So I say all those things, and they are true, and it does hurt, and it did hurt, and sometimes it still hurts again, and, you know, because life is real. But God showed me in that time how to come back to a place of worship and how to come back to being a member of the church. How to come back to being a person who loves and is loved. And he walked me through, the word I got was having an orphan spirit. Being right with Jesus isn't supposed to make you feel like an orphan. That's emptiness. Being right with God should make you more right with people. And I feel really fortunate that this has been such a safe place for me. I have been able to learn how to forgive. I've been able to learn how to reconcile in a way that I was never taught. So where I come from, domestic violence means that we don't talk. Like it's, you know, like another layer to some of the things that I was taught was I didn't finish school at all the same school. I didn't have all the same relationships all my life. I've had to learn some of those skills as an adult. And it's been a journey. But I've had a beautiful family and all of you guys that have so far welcomed and provided me understanding and a safe place to be. And that's huge. And again, I don't want you to feel that whatever you're putting into anyone in this place is lost. It's not lost. People are all on journeys. We're all, you know, we all bring our stuff. And I found it really hard to think about any of the times I've been let down because, one, I hate when people give me any sort of criticism. It's not cool. But I have a story about a tin of tomatoes and what are tins of tomatoes have to do with all of this? Well, when I was in need, I needed a tin of tomatoes and I reached out to two people. One of them bought me the tin of tomatoes. They gave me a hug and they stayed for a conversation. The other person didn't respond in any way, shape or form. That could go one of two ways. I could be angry at the person who didn't respond. I could be down the path of all the places that goes. Or I can forgive that person. I can love them anyway. You don't have to love the person that responds more than the person who doesn't respond. Everybody's on their own path and I've learnt a lot of grace. I've learnt that if I need grace, I've got to give it. If someone was willing and able to meet my need in that moment, that's wonderful. But if they don't, that's okay too. You know, like I just think coming back to us being frontline responders to all sorts of things, we've got to have some understanding of what that takes from a person. And I think the biggest thing that I want to leave you with is that the church is a sanctuary. The church is just such a beautiful representation of Jesus. And I had no idea what I was in for when I walked into this place 20 years ago. I didn't know what my journey would look like. I didn't know what healing would look like. I don't even know that I thought about that. I was exposed to so many concepts and so many structures and systems that were so foreign to me in my life. And that's a lot of people. I'm not special in that. I believe that as we walk into this new season, we're going to encounter people from different places and they're going to be confronted by the way we do life. But I believe that all of you sitting here and the ones not but represented, we're going to love well. Let's go.
Well done, Tennille. It was fantastic. It's amazing to hear the story of somebody who's been, you know, part of our world and on that journey for so long, where there's all these different times and levels and things that we remember, and some of those things that Tennille talked about, I remember very well. I remember, you know, Ali responding to some of those, you know, those frontline moments, you know, way back then. And I think, you know, for us, you never question whether it's worth it. But isn't it amazing when you see someone reflect on the journey and what God is doing? So let's never underestimate the little things, because, you know, it's a culmination of the little things that become very powerful things. Just as we finish off this morning, you tend to remember interactions that you have with all kinds of people for different reasons. You know, sometimes you might have that chance encounter with somebody famous and you remember how they treated you. You know, did they show some humility, or did they brush you off, or, you know, were they being brash, or then there can be people in your family and you remember particular encounters. And I want to share one that sticks in my mind really firmly this morning, is that while I was driving a very well-known and quite famous Australian to the airport, and he's famous both, you know, in church circles and more so in Australian society. And as we chatted away quite effortlessly, he kept asking about my world and what we were up to and what was going on, and we were sort of talking a lot about me, and sort of being aware of that and not wanting to make it all about me, I'd sort of try and steer the conversation back to him and just ask him about things, and he very skillfully and cleverly would always turn the conversation back, and you'd find that we were talking about me again, and he was deliberately doing that. And anyway, I drop him off, and I thought about that later on, and I thought about that conversation, and obviously he was good at doing that, but you can't keep doing that stuff, and you can't fake that stuff. You look at somebody who tries to do the right thing, and it sort of does just come off as lip service, doesn't it? And it doesn't quite work. But with this particular man, he, as I reflected on, I thought, well, what's the difference? You know, I've had similar conversations with lots of other people, and that one really does stick in my mind. And I thought, well, he was genuinely interested. He was actually really genuinely interested in what was happening in another brother in Christ's world. And that was where that came from. And in Romans, Paul is writing to a bunch of Christians who are very, very secular, very, very new Christians, and have grown up in a highly political world. And of course, they were the Romans. And so what he's saying to them would be very countercultural to the way that they had looked at the world and the values that they had. And he says this, he says, take a constant, this is from the Passion Translation, he says, take a constant interest in the needs of God's beloved people and respond to them and eagerly welcome them as guests into your home. And if you want to sort of get really practical about what it means to love one another, I think it actually starts by taking a genuine interest in people. You know, you can love out of duty, and maybe sometimes we've got to do that because, you know, we're in a bad place or whatever, and we've got a duty to love. But that's not a bad place to start, but it's not sustainable. I think we need to get to that point where we take a genuine interest in people. In other words, I don't just have an interest in Tom's world because he's in the church, or even because he's another brother in Christ. I actually care about what's going on in Tom's world, and I don't know everything. I only know little bits and pieces, but like a genuine interest. So when I talk to Tom, I'm wanting him to feel and understand that I am genuinely interested in what's in his world. And I can't fake that. And I'm actually, personally, I'm not that good at faking that stuff. So all I've actually got is to be real in what Jesus is actually putting in me. And so let's take that genuine interest in people. When you think about people outside of your immediate family, those who have had a significant impact on you at a relational level, I suspect it was because they took an interest. You know, school teachers that you might remember fondly, those who actually went beyond just doing their job and took an interest in not just what you were learning, but took an interest in you as a person. And that's what Paul was saying to the Romans, who were brought up to make relationships in a political manner because you'll get something from that. He said, no, he said, take a genuine interest in those brothers and sisters in Christ and live in such a way that you welcome them and include them in your world. And he says, you know, bring them into your house, bring them into your home. And that can cover a lot of other things too. But still, bringing people into your world is something that we've got to do as Christians. Genuine love is actually living a life where you have got the margin and the space and the genuine interest to bring people into your world. And we've talked about this over the years. We've talked about spacious life and living in such a way. But to love each other as Jesus loved us, we need to take that genuine interest. Jesus was invested and interested enough in you to die for you. Can we be interested enough to hear, understand, and engage in an effective way? And I know we all want to do that. I'm not talking to people that need convincing that it's a good thing to do. What we are trying to do in this series is heat the level of that up at a heart level. Decide that we're going to lift the value of that. And that we're going to make space in our world for that to actually happen in a greater way. And I'll just leave you with that this morning.